like, yeah, you have like rain. I think he called it like rainforest time versus whatever this time is. He's like, yeah, they'll be like, yeah, we're going to do this thing later, or, you know, this evening. And he's like, well, when is that? And he's like, when everybody shows up. He's like, well, when it, like, blah! You know, like, he's like, it takes a while for your, what, like, the living in the USA brain to be able to compute the shit. And I was like, yeah, so like, how's it work out? And he's like, yeah, they just do it when everybody shows up. And it's fine. You know, like, and like everybody's in tune with natural cycles because they're living in nature in a different way than we are and more aware of stuff. And like, you know, it seems like a spontaneous event almost, like, where people just show up and like, yeah, it's time now. What do you mean? It's just time. Like.
Welcome to the Self-Defined Human Podcast. I'm Michael Corman. This is a podcast about meditation, radical acceptance, music, art, and the paradox of being a human being. Today, I'm having another conversation with my friend, Samantha Fallhaber. Sam teaches jujitsu and communication, and she does coaching and all kinds of other cool things. She was the guest in the last episode, so check that one out. She requested that we have another conversation because there were some things she wanted to ask me. But what could they be? Let's find out.
I requested this second talk because I wanted to start by asking you a question.
Okay. What's your question?
How have you changed over the past year?
That's quite a question. This has been an interesting year for me. There's been a lot of things that have happened. And, you know, making videos has been a big part of it. Okay. I never made videos before. I never put them online. That's not 100% true, but look, that's a big part of it. Okay. So I got to a point this year where I was just saying whatever was on my mind, it was going on video, it was going online. That had consequences in the sense of, you know, I was pissing people off who, I don't know. I got more comfortable with that too. I've made a lot of things, okay? And those things that I've made have been gotten more to a point where I was like less perfectionistic about the ways in which I'm the types of things that I view myself as an expert in. Okay. So now I'm an expert in everything because that's, you know, it's just like, I want to, whatever it is that I know, I'm going to make a thing. I'm going to put it out there. Does that answer your question? I could probably go on.
Oh, I bet you could go on. There's a lot of ways. Like, I can't even imagine how many ways you've changed in the past year. I mean, I've also only known you for maybe that long, yeah, if that long, but like it seemed pretty obvious that it was a growth year, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of directions you could take that in, like skills and like fact, like messing with audio, like how many different directions.
Is this in response to the email that I sent out?
No, I haven't read any email.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This was my own thought.
I see. Because I sent an email out on, it was on December 31st, I think. And I
sent emails? That's new.
I just listed a whole bunch of stuff like this, of things that have happened this year.
Oh.
And
oh, yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah.
So you just want to read the list? I already did this.
I could, but the list is over there. I mean, on the
pretend you just met me at a bar and you're telling me about like your last year and, you know, I don't know anything.
Yeah. I made almost 400 videos. I sent out over, I think something like 170 emails. I made a whole bunch of products, okay, digital products, some courses, some just like little things, must be 10 or 15 of those. I learned skills, yeah, audio editing, video editing, acting. I logged, I don't know, on Insight Timer, something like 600 hours of meditation. I don't know. Lots of stuff.
Well, how did those things change you that you are able to observe? Like, those are actions and all, but what about the mushy inside?
Well, pick one and I'll tell you about it.
I'll pick a trait. Are you more confident?
I'm more confident about some things, less confident about some things.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Less confident in the sense of there's been more conflict in ways that I didn't anticipate, okay? Having conflicts with people that I never had conflicts with before. You know, things that I thought were going to work didn't work, okay? So...
Been there.
Yeah. More confident in the sense of I have had experiences that I don't know, that I guess I don't know. I'm trying to let my thoughts sync up with my voice. You know, there's sometimes when I talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my thoughts are very fast. My voice is, because I want it to be understandable,
the filter.
Something like that. I can sense it really clearly, like what I'm doing with it. It's hard to put this stuff into words.
Do you walk through the world differently than you did perhaps 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Yes.
And in what way? Can you identify any examples of that? You know, like, I used to do this, now I do this.
Do you want to know about external things, external behavior, or internal experiences?
Could you do one of each? Is that an option?
Yeah, I guess. Externally.
I feel like I care more about internal, but I feel like listeners would probably relate better to an external example and then going internal.
Okay, so then there's the question of things that other people would notice me doing or things that I can notice me doing. And those, well, then there's the question of how's that different from internal? I don't know. I mean, look, externally, as I said, the videos, you would not have seen that. I actually did post a video on Instagram a couple months ago of something that I had done back in 2013. It was a video of me. I was trying to offer my services as an English language tutor. So I made a short video about, I don't know, 30 seconds where I was, you know, telling people how great it would be if they learned English with me. And you can see, I mean, there's a huge difference when you look at that compared to what I'm doing right now. The way that I speak on video now, I don't script most of what I say. Okay. I just say whatever. And a lot of it's very imperfect. It's just sometimes I have no idea what I'm saying.
Well, that's really cool. That was kind of Ryan Orico's whole point, is that you're actually a human.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a new thing. That's a great thing. I love that.
So the internal experience, you know, something 5 years ago that you have changed now.
Yeah. I don't see myself as... There was a time when... Okay, what I'm trying to get at is the way... in which I care about how other people view me is different now than it was then. I used to see myself just from like a really small perspective, like I couldn't get outside of this space right here. I'm pointing to my head. Hold on, I need to cough. Don't worry, it's not COVID. I'm not contagious. I used to see myself from just right in here. Okay. I couldn't see myself from the outside. And so when, like, the strange thing is that all the things that I used to do, I still do those things. Okay. But I do some extra things now that make a huge difference. Like, if I have the sense that other people are judging me, are looking down on me, I can see that as an experience that I'm having. In addition to everything that I used to have, which was, you know, the feelings, the bad feelings that go along with that kind of thing. But now there's just a way of removing myself from it.
Removing yourself from what?
Removing myself from, hold on a second.
That one was COVID.
That was the COVID cough, yes.
Got it.
Slightly different.
More politicized.
Exactly. Removing myself from the experience of it, being just me.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know what that means.
I have no idea what it means.
So removing yourself from, so you said, so let me try to recap. So you said that you do see yourself only from a narrow internal lens, and you couldn't see yourself from an external perspective, which does an external perspective mean as others see you, or from that, like, the watcher, like the non-judge, the, you know, just the seeing, watching yourself as if you were outside of yourself, like, what is that?
I'm referring to watching myself as if I'm outside of myself, but I don't want to even be so specific about that, because it's a little subtler than that, because that implies that there's a self here and that there's a watcher out there, which is a separate entity that has a stable perspective, but it's not a stable perspective. It shifts a lot. So,
yeah, but maybe it's something that's available. Yeah,
it's available. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not always the, you know, you don't always need a hammer as the tool. You know, sometimes you need the drill. Like, all right, like, which one am I going to pull out in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Toolbox.
Like, I mean, just more practical example. There was a time I used to work at a university playing the piano in the singing department. And I was sitting, I went to the opera that they do every year, and I was just, this was in 2013, and I was sitting there, and I just had this sense suddenly of everybody just was, like, nobody wanted me there. Okay. Nobody respected me there. Nobody, like, they didn't want me to be there. Okay. Everybody, like, even the lowliest students there were above where I was. Okay. That was the sense that I had. And I couldn't stay there. I had to get up and leave. Okay, so I during the intermission, I just walked out. Nowadays, I'm not saying I wouldn't walk out, okay, but the sense of I have to walk out is not there anymore, because it's like I don't have that sense of being driven by my interpretations of events. You know, it's there's always a choice at this point that there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Back then. Oh man, yeah. I mean, do you think that was even true? Like, you know, it is a very self-centered perspective. You might be right, but it's also a very self-centered perspective. And I find that for the most part, people are also very self-centered and care less about you than you think, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, in that case.
Who knows what people think? I mean, this was a sense of just everybody in the room, you know, I don't know how many, a couple hundred people, I don't know, that they were all, it's vague. It's hard to really put it in. It's hard to really nail it down what I was thinking.
Was a sense of self-loathing a part of your life back then?
Yes, but I want to be clear that it still is, okay? These things haven't gone away, and I'm not expecting them to go away. Now, this might be a matter of language to some degree. There's a difference, you know, self-loathing. The question is, to me, is, well, what do you do with that? Like, what's the next step? Because if you're just saying self-loathing, well, that's a story. And the story itself is kind of neutral. It's just, it's a set of experiences. It's a certain memories, certain images, whatever you want to, however you want to define it. But my interpretation of that is different now. I don't identify with my self-loathing the way that I used to.
It's not all consuming. Like you said, you recognize a choice. And, mm-hmm. and that, like, I just had a conversation with someone last night about how, you know, some hard things that happened when they were a teenager, and to use the words like, you know, and then you do what you have to do, and what we have to, she's like, or I could say like what we have to do, or all these things. And I think related to your points that you're making here, like, I said that I was completely sure that he did exactly what he had to do because he did whatever he did, and that was the experience. But that doesn't mean the perspective on what he chose then, like the current way you think about what happened then can change, right? Can change the emotional charge of stuff. So if you think I had to do this versus even then I had a choice in the matter, then I think that can change the perspective on really, I mean, the reason I cared in the conversation we had was because of the way I see that reflecting forward into his life. Of like, okay, like if you're still living this idea that you had to do what you had to do, you're probably still thinking that now, and that's going to carry you on into the future of thinking that you're in these forced circumstances, when in reality, I believe you always have a choice, and the choice isn't always left or right. It's, you know, left, right, or like stop altogether and make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like, you know, it could be just not. I had a meditation thing happen with that years ago where I had all these things lining up for me to go take a course called Continuum Meditation out in Vancouver. And there was, you know, I was going to be able to meet an internet friend that I'd never met. I was excited to. I could stay at their house with him and his wife. And, you know, it had come up at this as being one of the few types of meditation that actually worked for my brother. And then a friend brought it up organically. I was like, oh, man, like, and I looked up and there was one slot left in the course, you know, all these things. Right. And then I even paid for the course. It was cheap. It was like only $137 or something like that. Anyway, it's like a weekend thing. And I was going to fly out there. And, the last thing to do was to buy the plane ticket, and I couldn't find my passport. And I was like, interesting. So I couldn't find my damn passport. I'm, you know, breaking down the house, all these things. And I used to, there was this, Maggie and I used to just wander around Philadelphia and find random places to hang out. And there was this giant corner off Washington, that used to be Cirque du Soleil when they come into town. Like, they use this area, like, to set up their tents and stuff. But there's a fence, and the fence was open, so people could wander in. It was like a giant private dog park because most people weren't there. And so I was letting her wander around in this space. And I decided to sit down and meditate, you know, and take a break from worrying about where my passport was. And I didn't usually have, I guess I still don't usually have visualizations in meditation, but at that point, you know, I'm sitting cross-legged in this field, and I just had this visual over and over again in my head of me going from standing to sitting cross-legged. And it just, like, it was like on a loop, like going from standing to sitting cross-legged, going from standing to sitting cross-legged. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to this thing. Like, I just had all these reasons to go, but I didn't actually want to go. And that was the moment in my life where I decided that my subconscious takes the reins on occasion to help me do what I actually want to do. So if I can't find my car keys, if I can't, like, do a thing, I'm just like, well, I don't get mad very often anymore. I'm just like, well, I guess I'm supposed to do this, or my subconscious, like, how is my subconscious helping me right now by having hid my fucking car keys so that I'm delayed? So I think you always, so that was the reason I brought that up then, was just that it was a, you know, my choice. Like, I thought it was just all go ahead, but it was like, oh, right, there's another choice here, which is not going at all. Like, I don't want to. Right, and that, yeah, hadn't even been on the table, like, as an option, you know? So even though it should be, like, a pretty obvious second option, it wasn't, like, on the table as one. And so in looking at everything now, like, I've had some charged conversations with people about this before, talking about, like, socioeconomic matters and all these things, and I'm just like, when you're looking from a broad perspective and you're seeing people as these monoliths, so whether you're thinking race or culture or all these things, and it's like, these people, you know, like, they have this, and it's like, well, there may be tendencies, and at the same time, every individual circumstance has intricacies we can't even fathom involved, and all of them have hundreds of perceived choices in any given moment. So you recognize that you have a choice in the way that you react to self-loathing or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of choices appear that just weren't there before. And simple things that you wouldn't even... And sometimes it's like, I don't notice that there's anything strange about it until I see other people that are... like
locked
in. They're locked in, yeah.
These are my choices. You're like...
Another big thing that changed for me too is, this is very noticeable internally, is the idea of having regrets about the past. That like the past used to be like a real thing to me. I used to think about things that I had done in the past, and like I used to play over in my head, like trying to imagine having, you know, doing it differently. And just there's this like real sense of, if I could just like imagine it right, then it would change. Then I would, you know, this would be the time where I would not do whatever I regret having done. Nowadays, that doesn't happen. There's no sense of regretting anything about the past. Like, there's just, I don't have, the past is just, I feel safe here. Like, the past is in the past, and this is, it's not as real as what's right here. That's a huge internal difference.
Did you go through like some individual emotionally charged things from your past and like make peace with them? Or this was just a thing you noticed at some point, like generally speaking, like, oh wow, I don't feel this.
There was a time where it was like my brain just started spontaneously going through a lot of stuff. Okay. And I could feel things like just rewiring themselves. And this lasted a couple weeks where it would just happen spontaneously. And I can't remember your question exactly.
If your new relationship with the past was based off of like specific processing that you did, or it was a generalization, which it sounds like it's a general, like you just kind of felt things sort of unravel.
Well, a lot of it. Oh, okay. So it's what it felt like to me really is that it was specific stuff, but it was also general in the sense of there's a general sense of what you said earlier about thinking about what you could have done in the past, how you could have, you had more choices than you thought you did in the past. I don't like that language. I mean, that's not how I look at it, because to me, there's something very liberating in noticing how I didn't have choices. There were no choices. Okay. Like what happened in the past happened because that's like that, that's just cause and effect. It had to happen that way. So there's a lot of that sense to me, that it's just what happened in the past. Like that's how it had to happen. Like there's no sense in going back and thinking.
I try to stand one foot in both of those puddles, so to speak, of yes, I'm sure that everything that happened was exactly what was supposed to happen. You know how I know that? Because it's how it happened. and the attitude about how that went down can shape you now. And that was my only argument with my friend about it. Like, if you're like, it feels different to me when somebody's like, well, you do what you have to do, and you have like sort of speaking in these generalities that box you in based on past evidence and past beliefs. And at that carrying you forward, like I think, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, being able to see yourself from the outside as like you're not the character in the story. You are the author of the story. You could have written it differently. You could write another story differently in which that character does something else. Like that's a useful perspective to be able to have.
You mentioned last time enjoying, you know, specifics and specificity and like being able to give people something that works, like, and we kind of touched on like micro building to macro being helpful. I do when I was asking you about, you know, was it specific things you did, or it's kind of, there's these weird things about growth, right? Like sometimes it's, I did these drills every day and, you know, it changed the thing. And, or there's like, you got a new job and it turns out you really hated your last one. And now you walk through the world differently and now everything changes. I don't fucking know like which one is better, or if I don't have to say that one is better, but it's interesting that there's so many avenues towards personal growth. that you know, seem unrelated, but you remove a stressor over here and it, you know, if you take the thorn out of the paw, so to speak, then you're a different person. My friend Chandler Stevens does a ton of work with embodiment stuff and getting people out of pain and accepting and unwinding their bodies and stuff. He's like, yeah, like when you walk around in a bunch of pain, like you're more of an asshole. Like, you know, like these things, even though it doesn't seem related, like some people don't connect their bodies to the way they act.
That's a big thing. That's another thing that changed for me. There's no sense now that there's a mind and there's a body and they're separate from each other. They're not separate.
Like it's so Western.
Yeah. It's all personal growth. All of that is, it's flexibility. It's the same thing. It's extremely physical. It's extremely physical. You're moving your body in a certain way. I don't know much about the science of it. I don't care much about the science of it. It's just that you're just moving in a different way. I don't want to talk about thinking. There's no thinking. There's no such thing.
Go on.
Well, what is thinking? How do you define thinking?
A bunch of words passing through my head.
I used to read, you know, I read a book, a couple of books, I guess, where that was the idea. Okay, what are thoughts? Thoughts are words in your head. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. And then I paid attention to my thoughts and I was like, I don't see a lot of words here. Okay. I see a lot of images. I don't see a lot of words. And so I don't know if that's just me or if that's, who knows? That was several years ago. And so I'm not convinced that there's a clear definition of thought anyway. Okay. Why does Michael say there's no such thing as thoughts? Well, it's not just because it's true. It's because I'm saying that because there's something useful about that. Even if you want to say they're words, what does that mean? They're words in your head. Like words are, what are they, sounds? Are they images? Like, do you see the words? Do you hear the words? Do you just know what they are?
That's a good point. Yeah. I'd say it sounds, but I see your point. And I feel like I'm very on the cusp of it being almost like written, like images of words that are written.
Yeah. So then what's the difference between a thought and a sound, or a thought and an image? You know, what's the difference between a thought and a word, you know, and a sound that you hear? Now you might say, well, it's because one of them is real. It's an external sound and one of them is internal. Is that what you would say?
I can see somebody saying that. I wouldn't say I do personally. What you're bringing up for me that feels interesting is the idea of, because, you know, I have visions and visuals and thoughts and all these things and sort of having put all of them into these little subcategories. What's coming up for me right now is thinking of noticing saying the word thinking, and also like, what if, what would happen if I stopped categorizing them into various subheadings, you know, and just be like, this is what's arising right now is a visual image. This is what these words are arising, which is essentially what I do in session with people now, and trusting that it's coming up however it's supposed to come up, you know, and expressing that, like, I have a vision of this, or these words came up, so I'm just going to translate them to you. And maybe there's room to de-silo some of that thought process, as it's easy to, at least for visuals, for that to seem more airy-fairy, instead of just being like, yeah, it's just the way it's coming up. And maybe it's all thought. The intangible that's coming up is...
Well, you know, there's a perspective of sort of this infinite consciousness where it's all consciousness. It's all mind. There's one mind. Okay. We don't have individual minds. When I started hearing about this stuff a few years ago, I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. And now it's just, yeah, like it's a perspective. It's not the only perspective, but it's a perspective, honestly, that I think most people do experience as they go about their day, but they don't necessarily notice they're experiencing it, but just of this undifferentiated consciousness and even like undifferentiated senses, like the idea of, you know, it's an image or it's a sound. Like, you think you know the difference. If I ask you, here's a stimulus, is it an image, is it a sound, you can probably differentiate. But when things are just happening, you're not necessarily making those distinctions, because those distinctions are extra work that you have to add to the process.
I think it's a wonderful thing to anchor everything into the body. Like, all of my best friends' conversations go into where do you feel that in your body? And what I'm noticing is that if you're not used to that, you feel crazy, or it feels crazy to them if I bring that up. They're like, well, where do you feel that in your body? Where do you feel that thought? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, it doesn't, you know, like, that connection has not been broached yet. And what it does for people is give them that sense of security, like, of like, oh, like, my body exists, sensation exists, like, it brings it out of the intangible grasping at all of the innumerable possibilities in your thought space, be it vision or sound or anything, into, okay, sensation. And you know, that's what I would consider grounding, is like bringing it into physical sensation, into physical body. Obviously, this is very much Vipassana stuff. I think I did it a little bit before then, but that certainly drove it home. And people I've studied with since then have some great things. One of my favorite drills that I've ever come across that I'm more and more stridently believing is needed is from this guy, Robert Silber, who wrote the book Conscious Sensuality. And it doesn't shy away from sex and communication and all these things. He's a tantra teacher, among many other things, and was a guy who spent his time going from thing to thing, trying to learn, you know, finding one school of dogma, seeing the holes in it, going to another school of dogma, seeing the holes in it, you know, like, he shares all these story stuff and being like, all right, well, this is what I came up with. But one of his drills that I really love is the idea that, like, at the end of your day, and he's like, and try to do it just for within the last 24 hours, he calls it the SET method, sensation, emotion, thought. And at the end of your day, you just try to think back to a few things in your day that happened, and you go, okay, you know, when Molly said that to me, you know, you think of the moment, you're like, okay, what was the sensation I felt when she said that to me, you know? And so you put a sensation to the anxiety that rose up in you, whatever, you know, and it felt like a tightening in my abdomen that rose up to my chest and stopped at my throat. And the emotion that I attached that to, in my understanding, is anxiety, just for example. And the thought that was attached to that was that she hates me, you know? Like, and it just kind of brings the insane of us into paper and pen, and even writing it out has a different feel to it than just thinking about it, although it's a tool you could use just talking. And I just think it's so bloody genius. Like, it just covers most of the breadth of the insanity and brings it into a real spot and lets us, you know, focus on that. So if I had one wish for everybody in the world to start doing, it would be putting 10 minutes on a clock and doing the SET method every night and seeing what happened.
Yeah. After that. Sensation, emotion, thought. That's,
yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Like, anything that's experiences, like, or thoughts, like, you, if you view them, like, it's, here's something, like, where you look at things from your thoughts. Wait, what is it? Like, you look at from your thoughts or at your thoughts. I think that's how it's phrased. Like, those are two different ways to do it. And when people are stuck looking from their thoughts, then that's a problem.
Very narrow.
Yeah. Right. But when you decompose it, and there's different ways to do that. And I think it can go very deep into decomposing it into just basic sensory experiences. That's where you get freedom from that, is to see that a thought, what you thought was a thought, or what you just thought was reality. You couldn't even see it as a thought. Okay. Because that itself is an accomplishment. A lot of people don't even, they can't see their thoughts as objects. It's just, this is how it is.
You're so right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point.
Thank you.
What do you think about clipping this one at a little shorter here so people don't be like, oh God, I have to listen for an hour and a half if I want to listen to the genius of
Yeah, sure.
How do you, well, you want to do that real quick? Just in the moment right now, do a little modeling of what sensation, emotion, thought might be. If I ask you to check in with yourself, what is that? Or I can go first, or you can say no.
I'm bad at modeling because the thing is that when I look at emotions, they dissolve into sensory experiences, and I don't feel like I'm being truthful if I were to. Do you want to do you go first?
Let's see. All right. So for me, I would kind of just scan into my body for a second and be like, all right, what, if anything, am I feeling? It's always changing, so it's fun. Which one am I going to grab, right? Okay. I feel the most prominent thing I notice is I feel a bit of a tightness in my left side chest that rides out to my shoulder on the back side from the front to the back. And I don't expect people off the bat to be this specific, but I'm like, and the emotion that I attach to that is actually, I got a visual of like a crying child. And so I'm going to say sadness. Is the emotion I attach to that. And the thought is that I probably have some trauma still stored there from when an injury happened in a jiu-jitsu match in 2012. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so I'll just pick out some sensations. Like I feel there's tingling on the right side of my face. There's throbbing on the left side, there's in the center of my head, in the center of my skull, there's pressure. The emotion, I'm trying to think of a word for it. Like, I don't know a word. Just like the sense of, like, I'm kind of holding on, like I'm stuck, like I'm waiting for something to happen and it's not happening.
Great.
Yeah. And thoughts. I'm imagining you staring at me and kind of waiting for my answer, waiting for me to give you the information.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. We did it.
We did it.
Did you die?
I think I'm still here.
Feel my cells dead, I'm sure, because that's just always happening.
What's happening?
I was just, whatever, nerd joke just about, apoptosis or cell death is always happening.
Oh, yeah, so, okay. You could say each moment is... comes
little
and
death.
Goes and then
little death. Mm-hmm. Not the same person. I'm under no responsibility to be the same person now that I was a minute ago.
I know. It's not going to stop people from holding you to that.
Yeah. It's a good thing I don't have Twitter. But you really set yourself up for not political office, I think, over the past year. Or maybe
probably,
you have.
Yeah. Yeah, I had never had any political ambitions, so
it's just that crazy thing of if all of our lives being recorded so detailed and like not having, how is anybody going to do anything in the future? Things are going to have to change. Like with this way that we comb through people's past to find anything,
It's not a big deal though. See, people, what really causes a problem is when people are afraid of that. Okay, because when you look at, Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian, whatever, these people mm-hmm. who made, they became celebrities based on things that other people would kill themselves over. Okay, mm-hmm. If you tell the story the right way, then, and that's the thing that I've always been thinking, with myself, has been, there's something kind of exciting about that. Like, yeah, I'll put all this data out there. Okay. All this stuff out there. And it's like, you know, at the same time, I'll practice telling stories. So at some point I'll just be a total master of it where I can just be whatever I want to be.
Where is this going? Where's the Michael Corman train, you know, headed towards 2021? Are there any plans, or is it totally moment to moment?
Both. The problem is that it's both, because there are plans, but the plans change moment to moment. So that's, I'm hoping, okay, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm hoping that I can kind of get this enlightenment project to the point where the plans don't change so much moment to moment. And I don't know, or at least where I don't resist the change so much. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. But there is a certain degree to which I kind of think that meditation has kind of broken my brain a little bit, to where some things might be out of my grasp for the moment.
What's the Enlightenment Project? Probably missed another email, or
it's just my name. It's my pet name for this thing of trying to complete the path of insight, which I kind of think might be possible. I don't know. We'll find out.
Wish you luck on that. I watched a 53 part something or other, like really kitschy biopic of Buddha that was on Netflix.
You told me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like ridiculous and over the top. And like, it didn't have a lot of songs, but no, it did have some songs, maybe. Anyway, Bollywood-esque stuff. And I mean, it was also great, and like, God, I mean, they spent so long on all the parts of his life, so it was kind of great because there was no skimming, well, as much as you can in, you know, whatever. Still, it's still 50 hours of supposedly somebody's entire life, but you know, like all these things. But yeah, it was so cool, like watching, you know, him, the story go through all those stages and stuff. And yeah, I mean, there's so much room for like the power of myth and archetypes, and like, you know, the stuff that really moves people is much more ephemeral than we like to think, you know, symbolism and all this stuff. And it feels like the people that really latch on to the power of symbolism and stuff are the ones that are really, I don't know, making waves for people. Just, I think is a failing of mine as a teacher, because I tend to go very practical with stuff, even though I believe all these things, and I'm just like, no, we're going to go, and this is how we're going to do it, instead of taking them on like a journey of some sort, or they feel like they go through, you know, over the river and through the woods and end up at grandmother's house. It's like, no, here's the map. We're going from here to here. You know, it turned very stoic.
Why do you think that's a failing of yours?
I think it'd be more effective if I was, if I freed myself to be, to guide people's imaginations more. But my mission has been more to try to open people up to their own imagination. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's my answer.
Right.
It's like people want to be told what to do. and that can be its own door. Like, it can be. I don't like it. Maybe I'm totally open to that being some personal thing of mine, of like, you know, let other people control my imagination for too long. And then, you know, now I'm stalwart, bulwarked against it, even though it could be really good to do, you know, and isn't. And to your points too, like, nothing is necessarily evil. It's just is all these things. So the fact that I feel any resistance to that probably means something, you know.
Do you find that your clients the fact that you're not that they are showing you that it's not working, that they're somehow not using their imaginations, that they're not willing to do what you are wanting them to do?
What's coming up is, I think I'm so focused on autonomy and like being as minimally involved in their process as I can while creating a structure, that they would probably get farther if I carried them a little more, like, until they were ready to go. Because I've had people give me like lots of money before and gone through like several months together of these like more in-depth courses and things, and And there are times that I think about them and I go, oh man, like, I feel like they're not, it seemed like we had enough repetition under our belts for these practices to carry forward. And then I'll have contact with them and it doesn't seem like that's happening. Like, even though it seemed like it was very beneficial, you know, simple things like making sure you take a break, you know, just focusing on experiential stuff. Like, if you take a break between work and the rest of your day, you know, go for a walk, put a punctuation mark on that and pay attention to your surroundings. Like, you know, that's great. And you go over all, wow, it really makes you feel so much better and it's different and blah, 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 and all these things. And then you talk to them 4 months later and they're back. So obviously there was a shift that needed to happen, or that's a judgment, right? Like, they still have that experience in their psyche, and I can't take away their autonomy to do or not to do the thing, you know? Like, mm-hmm. So maybe I still created too much, or maybe it doesn't have to do with me at all, like too much dependency on like the weekly check-ins being the thing that was the reason that they did the stuff, you know, even if they said they feel better and all these things.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, that's constantly the question.
Have you seen the movie The Karate Kid?
Yes, not for a very long time.
You know that the most famous scene with wax on, wax off, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure.
It's when he starts training him, he has him do all these menial tasks, waxing the car, mm-hmm. painting the fence, and this for 3 straight days, and he doesn't. It's like, this is not karate. This is nothing. This is just, you're just having me do chores.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it turns out that he was like, those movements were the foundations of the karate that he was teaching. And so by doing that repetition and focusing, you know, focusing on his breathing the whole time, he was very specific about how he wanted him to do it. And that was teaching him something. And I love that, because that's how I look at teaching. It's like, it's the job of the teacher to create an experience for the student where the student cannot help but learn. Okay. Because you are, it's like you're training an animal. Okay. Where you, it's like, it doesn't matter whether you know you're learning it or not. It's like, you're going through this experience. It's like doing a meditation retreat. You're going through this experience and you will learn. Okay, you have to, because that's the experience itself is kind of forcing you to do it.
I think once you have an experience in your body, like to my point about like, say, the walks in between work and not work, you know, and what that felt sense is of taking time for yourself, like I think it's in you forever. And so, you know, you can call on it. And that's why experience is so important, he said, which... You know, like the healing with people around, like there's a big difference between healing as an individual, like, and I mean healing in terms of like having a felt sense of comfort and safety where you hadn't had it prior. Like maybe it's sharing your emotions or whatever. Like, you know, if you're really afraid to be sad because that's how your parents modeled relationship to sadness, and that was your main example. And then you get to a point where you're okay crying by yourself, like, oh, cool. Like I got this. It's still different to be witnessed crying. And, and that's a huge thing. One of my friends, Heather, is a sexual healing coach, and like, good God, like the stuff that's associated with all that, doing self work and then being witnessed is a, you know, they're all steps in the same mandala or whatever, but like, it's a very different thing. And that's, I think that's one of the things that we have to go back to as a society is being able to have the emotional and communicative skills to, witness and be witnessed without, making things worse, you know, making more grounded people. So that's possible, you know, like,
yeah, that's tough. People are messed up.
Really are, man. But they don't have to be, like, you know, they're not stuck.
Right.
They're a different person every moment, you know, even though it feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you can just witness the fact that things are changing at all, then, know, that's the point. All right, maybe you can start to realize that things are changing, even if it doesn't feel like it for you. You know, mm-hmm. you just weren't consciously engaged in your life for however long. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I am not my emotion.
Ah, there's so many things to talk about here. I wish I could talk to you for hours and hours, because there's a couple of things I want to practice too.
We could do that even just like non-record. I mean, I don't record it or not. Like, I'd be fine with that. If you, yeah. you can always okay. just call me sometime. Yeah, you're more than welcome not. To do that too. Yeah, people are weird about that these days, right? They're like, oh, you don't text before you call? And I'm like, no, now I just call. Like, uh-huh. and if you don't want to pick up, that was actually a line from that same Conscious Sensuality book that I really latched onto, was him talking about, like, he's like, it's really important to me to, the words exactly, but basically to decide when I use my phone, you know, like, just because somebody's calling doesn't mean that they get to talk to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And he brings up an example of somebody, like, yeah, it's really important for me to do this. And then somebody was calling him, they were calling him back about something. And so it was like, ah, you know, even though I'm not really in the space, I'm going to answer the phone. And, you know, we've all done that. And then, you know, he's not really like in the moment with her and like gets irritated and he's not really present and all this stuff. And then it turns into this whole thing because he decided to pick up. Whereas if he just left it and she left a message and he called her back when he was ready, like, it would have been way better, you know? So I'm like, if you're my friend, you probably have to expect, I've teased you about this, but I'm consciously this way about like not responding to text messages until it feels like I want to, or I'm ready to, or I can be present with the conversation. You know, if you responded back right away, you know, these types of things. But
this is horrifying to me to realize the ways in which it's like, because if I were to just do things like that, okay, all the time, like, realizing how much things would fall apart. Okay, how much is being held together by the insistence that it's done on schedule, you know, that it's done according to the rules, and looking around and like, that's the society that we live in, is all held together by that. And that is weird. Like, even just sitting right here, like these Zoom calls, like, this is what we do now. It's like on Zoom, it's like we didn't have conversations like this where I had to sit here staring at one point in space for hours. Like, that's not how it used to be. It used to be that I could like move around, you know. Okay,
in the floor here.
Yeah. Like, but now I'm gonna be out of the frame if I do that. I have to move the tripod and move the microphone, and everything has to adjust. So
God,
I'm just gonna
right.
sit here.
God, that is so weird. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much, there's room for that for that grip to loosen, you know, like, I don't necessarily mean we need to drop it into full chaos or something, but like, at least questioning it mm-hmm. and trying to make decisions. There's this shaman that I worked with 2 years ago now on a weekend course I was helping facilitate. He was talking about the Shipibo people in Peru. And he always like brings back like tapestries and stuff from them and sells them. And he was like, yeah, he's like, yeah, you have like rain. I think he called it like rainforest time versus whatever this time is. He's like, yeah, they'll be like, yeah, we're going to do this thing later, or, you know, this evening. And he's like, well, when is that? And he's like, when everybody shows up. He's like, well, when it like, blah, you know, like, it's like, it takes a while for your the living in the USA brain to be able to compute the shit. And I was like, yeah. So like, how's it work out? And he's like, yeah, they just do it when everybody shows up and it's fine. You know, like, and like everybody's in tune with natural cycles because they're living in nature in a different way than we are and more aware of stuff. And like, you know, it seems like a spontaneous event almost, like, or people just show up and like, yeah, it's time now. What do you mean? It's just time. Like, there's time massage. I've heard of time massage being taught similarly to that, of like, you know, like, here's the arm, there's the spot. Do you see? Okay, like, and you're like, what do you mean that's the spot? And you're like, no, that's the spot. And you're like, can't you tell? And it's like, yeah. Versus like, I need to know why and exactly.
Well, this is why I said I don't know the scientific explanations behind certain things, and I don't care to know them, because you know, science is useful when it's useful and sometimes it's not useful. And, you know, you look at like this book, Yoga Anatomy. Okay, look, do you know this book? Okay, well, it just popped into my head. Okay, it's just like, okay, sure, anatomy. Like the thing with anatomy, and this is not the fault of the book. This is just the way people read books like this. It's like there are specific parts, body parts. There's no body parts. Like we don't have parts in our body. Like that's crazy. And if you insist that we do, it just leads to all kinds of insanity, which I can't even put into words. You know, it's like, it's all connected. Okay. Like if I pull on my hand, like it's not just my hand that moves. Nobody seems to notice this. Like sometimes I feel like I'm the only one who sees it, but it's the same thing with everything. You know, you pull on one thing, you push on one thing, and it all moves because it's all, you know, it's just connected.
Yes.
I hope that what I'm saying is useful to somebody. I hope it's not just, you know, just talking.
Yeah, man. And you hope that like something you say becomes a light bulb moment for someone, even if it's like a tiny spark of something that makes them do a Google search or think about something a different way and, you know, that they hadn't thought of could be before, but it makes enough sense to just kind of catch on some part of whatever their brain.
So do you think anybody would do a Google search based on what we just said?
They might look up that book.
Okay.
Based on what you just said about anatomy, that would be like, there's the whole, like the paradigm shift, right? Is what everybody's going for these days. Like a shift of paradigms, which I really need to look up what the definition of a paradigm even is. But it seems to be like the way you think the world works or the way it can work, right? Like I'm in this thing that everybody thinks is a scam called a prosperity blossom, but it's a bunch of people like that do energetics of giving and receiving with money, all this stuff, and it's not a scam. It's
anything with the word prosperity immediately sets off alarms in my head.
It's so interesting. Like it's interesting, like the way that stuff goes. You're so right. Like totally. Yeah, right. And like I think that's what podcasts do for people a lot is expose them to ideas they'd never heard of. Like some of the most influential books I listened to them. They're on Audible, but we're our Norman Doidge, who's a neuroscientist, doing these books called the brain's way of healing is his most recent one, and The Brain That Changes Itself. And it's like a lot of it's just story about, you know, how this person had this going on and yet they were able to do this, you know, like deaf people can hear, blind people can see, blah, blah, like paralyzed people can move. Like just everything is possible. Like, you know, I'm cold a lot right now. I've noticed that. And I was telling my boyfriend about that. I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to start taking cold showers. At least a couple of times a week to start like reprogramming like my internal thermostat to not be cold all the time, you know? Huh. And he was like, you can do that? I'm like, fuck yeah, you can do anything. Like
I didn't know that was a thing.
Dude, Wim Hof basic stuff, you know, like, yeah, he actually did. Wim Hof was recently on Michaela Peterson podcast, and it was released on the Jordan Peterson podcast as well. And it's the most adorable thing because it just, my friend Colin and I are the most synchronistic friend that I have, where we're into so many of the same things to about the same degree. And a lot of that is like knowing about enough modalities that have been turned into modalities that we can point somebody in a direction to go, you know, to find a coach that's better than we are in them, you know, or give them a little bit of information about it. So Wim Hof is known as the Iceman, right? He's done all these broken records upon records upon records about what is possible for human physiology and how much control we can actually exercise on what has been defined as the nervous system that we can't control, like the autonomic nervous system. He's like, no, like we can. Peterson made a really fun point that Wim said he'd never thought of before about how breath is this thing that's autonomic and automatic that we can also control. So it sort of exists as the door between the conscious and unconscious control of our bodies. It's like, ah, that makes sense. But, you know, Peterson's the kind of guy who's always saying, like, yeah, I've read, like, 67 books about, you know, this one year in the Soviet Union and shit. And you're like, holy shit, this guy's well read. And no matter what, and he constantly says this, too, he's, like, painfully aware of how little he knows, you know. And even being this well-versed on so many things, doesn't know jack shit about, like, this whole world of body stuff. And so he's a complete beginner in this podcast where Wim Hof is teaching him about cold exposure, you know, voluntarily moving into the fray, right? Which is a psychology concept of, like, helping people overcome fears about having, getting them to voluntarily confront them in a way that's progressively loaded. And breath work. And so, like, overcome anxiety, use your physiology to change your physiology, which changes your anxiety and lots of other things. And he's like the most beginner, and it's really entertaining and kind of endearing to listen to about, like, so you're saying 30 seconds, you know, like, what do I do? You know, uh-huh. It's very, very cute, but, yeah, just like the realm of human possibility is so limitless. It's insane. Like, there's not much we can't change about ourselves. And the more we learn about epigenetics and gene expression and how, like, the way you view yourself changes the way your DNA is switched on. And we're getting more and more proof of this. I'd never really liked Joe Dispenza for some reason. Like, I just never got into his stuff. And then recently I listened to him and was like, he had I actually really liked podcasts to listen to. And he talked about how science is actually, the most universal language. He's like, yeah, what if I talk spirituality? I'm going to turn off a certain number of people in the room, you know, and I forget what else he named, but several other things. But, like, when I use scientific data, like, everybody seems on board, you know, like, everybody can listen to that. And I was like, that's an interesting point, because I've definitely gone in that field of, like, you know, full-blown resentment that people need scientific proof that something feels good. Like, I hate how there's books on, like, did you know laughter is good for you? Did you know play? Like, okay, now that I know that there's scientific double-blind studies about how pleasure does something to your brain, now I can allow I'm like, well, fuck off. Like, you know, I don't know. So that was a moment of a line of somebody saying that, like, shifted me a little bit. You're like, okay, maybe I don't have to think this way. That makes sense.
Yeah, sure. But I think you're right too. Like, people do.
It is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. There's something weird going on there. Like, people need scientific, they need that stamp of authority from science before they'll even let themselves go there. And they'll have arguments about things. Like, that's why I get turned off by it now. Look, I have a scientific background. I mean, I was really into science for a long time. And, you know, at some point, it's like, well, there's a certain realm, there are certain layers of human experience that cannot be understood intellectually and which are full of paradox and contradiction. So in order to experience this, you have to let your mind go into that place where it's just going to be all contradiction. And if you're a scientific person, you're just going to be turned off by that. You won't allow that. Okay, sure. Yeah, but some people need it. Some people, if they don't hear scientific proof, then they won't even let themselves listen. So that's true. Yeah.
And you can look up scientific studies to support any point you want.
Well, this is what I hate, is that it feels dishonest to me. If I'm going to say, well, in order to get you to listen to me, I'm going to dig up some scientific studies that support my point just to get through your defenses.
Yeah. And maybe for some people, that's exactly, they're willing to do that for the person. And maybe you and I aren't right now, you know, but anytime I express resistance to something, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably be doing that in 3 weeks, you know, like that happens a lot.
Well, I worry about this because it's not, like, with my current anti-scientific stance, I worry that I am only attracting people who are just total new age bullshit, okay? And that's not who I am at all. But it's like, because that's how I sound, I guess.
You need some beads.
Yeah, right. I don't want those people, and I don't want to attract people who only want science, you know? And it's like, there's no, that's a struggle for me. That's confusing for me.
Yes. Yes. I am having these arguments with a friend right now where I like trying to figure out the puzzle pieces of accepting them fully and accepting myself fully in the same moment. It's really confusing sometimes. what if the thing that I accept about myself is feeling like you need to change, then that's not accepting you.
My
paradox, like, somehow.
It's all paradox. It all is, because you realize, like, you are a human being. That's just what you are. And you know, you can gain all this wisdom, and you can, you know, whatever. You can meditate, and you can learn to observe without reacting. But the fact is that you still have reactions. And, you know, in order to get what you want, you have to act like a being that has cravings. Like, that just has to happen.
That's why it's good to take breaks and tap into your body. Like, here is a thing that is happening. I have the sensation. I can't argue that. Mm-hmm. You know? Whereas everything else is very arguable. That's how I see it.
Well, the purpose, like, the point of, like, thinking about Buddhism, like, the Four Noble Truths, it's like, the idea is not to eliminate pain. It's not to eliminate desire. It's not to become totally detached and somehow solidify the sense of just the detached observer. The idea is to eliminate ignorance, which is, you know, if you kind of think of it as being like where I am unaware of which urges are driving my actions. Like, that's not a good thing when you're doing stuff and you don't know why you're doing it. The idea is not to stop doing things. It's not to get rid of the urges. Like, you can't do that. It's just, you want, like, at all times to become aware of why you're doing it. And that requires embodying those urges, like, willingly. Like, this is happening to me. It's a thing that's happening in my body. And, like, I'm not going to just insist that I am observing it, like, from a distance, because that's a duality that you're artificially imposing on it, which is like, that's an intermediate step. Like, if, when you start meditating, you have to do that, because that's new, like, because you're kind of caught up in it to the point where you can't even see it at all. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between solidifying an observer and seeing. They're two different things.
There's a moment of separation and then back in. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool. I can have all these things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had something else. I lost it. It's okay. Where the fuck do thoughts come from, man? I've been thinking that too.
They just happen.
How do I know what's even like my own voice? You know, sometimes I'm like, God, like, how do I know this is me? Like, it's like, you know, is it just the muse passing by? You know?
It's, you could say this about anything. Where does anything come from? You know, I heard somebody on a podcast some years ago saying something like the brain, or like talking about the mind and the brain being different, and how the brain is, I forget exactly how it was phrased, but how it's just like the scientific model is telling you that the brain is the seat of your consciousness. And they were kind of saying, well, that's just the scientific model. Like, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit confused at the time. And now it's like, yeah, like just think, like, the brain is not anything. Like, I've never seen my brain. I don't know that I have a brain. Okay. Like, I heard that from somebody. Like, mm-hmm. as far as I know, the brain, it's just an image I have. Like, that's not, like, the mind created the brain. Okay, that seems true to me. It seems false to say that the brain created the mind. Like, I mean, maybe in some sense that's true, but that's an abstraction that I'm not comfortable.
Out of consciousness arises corporeal form versus the other way around. Yeah, it doesn't seem right to have an inanimate body come up with consciousness, you know?
I don't see any inanimate bodies anywhere. I only see animate bodies. Like, I only see conscious experience. That's all. That's all I see anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, what my thought was before was just about like leaning into stuff. Like you're saying, like, what if, you know, instead of trying to resist it, just be like, what if you just lean the fuck in? You know, I asked a client the other day whether or not they, like, their little boy likes to throw things right now, and they're very discouraging about that. About, no, stop that. And he's very energetic and all these things, very cute and all stuff. And I was just like, have you ever put Melvin in a place where he could throw as much as he wanted? You know, I'd just be curious, like, what would happen if you did that? Like, would he ever throw himself out? Would it lose novelty? You know, like leaning into, Aubrey Marcus just had a podcast about relationships and talking about like, how, you know, for example, you know, a woman he was dating at one point that had been slut shamed a lot. And so for her, like, to be called a slut in a sexual context that was safe was actually kind of empowering and like taking power back for that. But then like, after a while, it wasn't like she got over it, like, because she'd experienced it in a safe way and it no longer held a charge for her. And so, you know, he tried to do dirty talk again, and she's like, I don't like that anymore. He's like, what are you talking about? You just love that. And he's like, yeah, I don't like it anymore. You know, I'm over it. And I'm evolving all these things. Like, you know, if you lean into the thing and like figure out how to experience it in a way that your nervous system doesn't interpret as trauma, then you change something. You get over it. You know, and then there's so many layers to that, you know, how food and
I have in music, I was at some point, I had this idea where it was like, everything is right. Like the easy way is the right way. Okay. So if it's easy, if I'm like trying to like, I can't play this thing, I can't do it correctly. It's like, well, okay, let me do it the easy way, whatever the easy way is, that's the right one. And there's a lot of these like little realizations I had, that's something worth playing around with. I'm trying to say something useful here. I want people to be helped by this, but it's easy is right. If you want to fix a mistake, the first thing to do is get to a point where you're comfortable making the mistake. Like that's what I want you to work on first before trying to get it right. Like, try to get it wrong and get to the point where you can do that predictably. I mean, that right there will fix 99% of all mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more fun too.
That makes perfect sense to me. Fuck. I do feel like we could go on forever here. Cause I'm like, oh, what about this painting stuff you've been doing, Michael, and all these things that I'm supposed to help somebody with things. this is fun. Yeah. Yeah, man. Thanks for taking me up on and talking again as well.
We'll continue this. Thanks, Sam.
In the comments, if you'd like to leave something that was helpful for you, let us know.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
If anything was helpful. What's your listener like? Do you get like tallies or anything about listens?
How many people? Numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know who they are necessarily, you know, unless they happen to contact me. But
do you have a goal for that? How many listens you'd like to get on average?
No, I haven't thought about that yet. My goal with the podcast is to get to 12 episodes, which when I publish this one, that will be 12.
What?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. Because
and
12,
you can never do it again. 12 apostles.
I believe 12 is the number where the majority of podcasts have not made it to 12. Okay, so I think at 12, I will be in the top 50%.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Nice. People just aren't committed enough to continue.
I think so.
Stuff. And you have to get through, like, are people listening or not? Like, you have to get over that hump of, like, caring so much about numbers and stuff.
It's tough.
Instead of just viewing it as information. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I publish a lot, you know, you put a lot of work into it and then you don't hear anything. It's like, you know, was it worth spending hours, you know, filtering out all the little stray sounds that I didn't want to hear? Like, was it worth, you know, going through and, you know, writing out the timestamps and everything? Like, it takes time, you know, and then you hear nothing, and it's like, who knows?
yeah, man. I try to remember that with my newsletter sometimes. Like, I think I send it to 500 and some people regularly, and then like if I consciously tried not to look at like opens and stuff for a long time, and I generally don't, because I don't want to be attached to that. But yeah, sometimes it feels like speaking to the void. And then the other day I looked and it was like, I don't know, on average I was getting like 100 some opens, and I was like, you know, and I could be like, oh, that percentage isn't great, right? But it was like, fuck, like there's like, and you know, maybe 50 of them just accidentally were scrolling through their inbox and it accidentally opened, and that's my open rate. Like, who knows how far they got, but it's still like, just imagine that, in fact, like 100 people.
Oh yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's crazy. Wait, it's crazy, really. Because like, think about like in the 90s, like how many people were hearing what I was saying? It was not 100 people. Like if I said something like, but now it's like these numbers get weird. Like the proportions, we don't have a good sense of it. Cause yeah, when you look at them as individuals, it's a lot of people, but 100 out of 500, you should probably, there's probably people on your list that aren't engaged, you know?
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Probably get rid of those people.
I just don't care.
It would look better, you know?
Who?
Well, first of all, okay. If you got it, if you cleaned out your list to where you had like 60%, that would open, like you could do that. Okay. If you just got rid of 300 people, then you would have, that would be 50%. Okay. That would possibly motivate you. And also it might be, it might improve your deliverability too, because it would know, your mail service would know that more people were seeing it.
Yeah. Maybe.
If that's going to stop you from writing, you know, if that's going to, then of course it's not worth.
Past me used to like enjoy running until I used a timer. Like, oh, this is great. And then as soon as I numerified it, I was like, ah, fuck this shit. I don't care anymore. Yeah. I would get overly competitive, but that's also me talking from like 20 years ago, like literally 20 years ago. So, you know, maybe I'd be fine now because I'm a very different person. As I keep trying to tell my dad, I'm a different person now, Dad. I have confidence now.
Yeah, but this is hard.
It's weird. It's unnatural. This is why I like in person and like real conversations and stuff. Mm-hmm. Why this stuff makes more sense to me. But
like I'm running Facebook ads now, and I'm like obsessing over the stats on that. So
yeah,
it's not necessarily
good. I've seen them. I've seen some.
Oh, you have? Nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I haven't clicked because I didn't want to cost you money, since I've already follow you and stuff. But I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it does, but thanks for considering it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Appreciate you. Hope you have a hope you do whatever you want to do.
You too.
thank you. Cheers.
Talk
to that.
You. Yep. Talk to you later. All right. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast or this episode or whatever, then please rate it or review it or whatever on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do that. I don't know. Can you rate on Spotify? I don't know. I know a lot of people listen to this on Spotify. You can check the website, michaelcorman.com, and I'll put whatever notes I think are relevant for this episode. Talk to you next time.